From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. While no one goes into medicine thinking it'll be easy, the coronavirus pandemic has been extremely difficult for doctors, nurses, and other healthcare workers. They're at the bedsides of very ill and dying patients. They're following extensive and time-consuming protocols, and they're trying to avoid COVID-19 infection themselves. But while the public seems to have a new appreciation for these Granite Staters, what else do health workers want and need from their employers and their communities? That's what we're asking today in The Exchange as our in-depth series on COVID-19 and healthcare continues. And Exchange listeners, we welcome your questions. If you work in healthcare or if you have questions about what it's like to be in this setting right now, join us with an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. You can use Facebook or you can give us a call. Our phone number, 1-800-892-6477. Our guests are Brittany Booten, a licensed nursing assistant at Catholic Medical Center in Manchester. Brittany's also worked in a rehab hospital and a nursing home. Also with us, Dr. Meredith Milligan. She graduated from medical school in 2018. She's a second-year family medicine resident at Concord Hospital. And Taylor Trask, she recently became a traveling nurse with Medical Solutions. Her first assignment was a COVID-19 unit at a Brooklyn hospital. Welcome to all of you. And Brittany, let's start with you. What do you want people to know about what your work is like right now?
Hi, thank you for having me, first of all.
And you're welcome.
What I want people to know is how much it's changed. There's been an extensive difference. I mean, healthcare, just to begin with, is not an easy profession, and it takes a vast team of professionals to organize the entire effort. But especially right now, there's been a lot of change with the pandemic at foot. And I just want people to be aware of that and the impact that's not only happening inside the hospitals, but that's really encompassing our entire communities. It's about awareness.
What kind of changes, and we'll definitely go into detail as the hour unfolds, Brittany, but just what are some of the biggest changes that you faced on a day-to-day basis?
I would say some of the biggest changes is the entire routine inside the hospital. I would say compared to the winter, let's just say compared to November, there's been an extensive change when it comes to policy and procedure and just the way information is spread, even how the hospital is set up. There's been so much policy change, and we've had to reroute units, and like workers are only allowed to go in certain areas of the hospital. We all have to wear masks. Like, it goes on and on with the different change. So being able to cope with that and trying to understand the change of policy, as it seems that it's been changing ever so frequently over the past few months.
Sure. It sounds emotionally exhausting, Brittany.
It is. It's definitely hard to cope with when you're not really sure what's going on. Because given this pandemic, this coronavirus is new to all of us. So there has been, you know, other illnesses in the past, but this is brand new to all of us. And as a lot of people have been saying, the impact has been unprecedented.
So Dr. Milligan, how about you, Dr. Milligan? What do you want listeners to understand what it's like to be in healthcare right now?
Well, I do definitely want to echo some of what Brittany has been saying, that there have been so many changes over the past couple of weeks to months that there is definitely an amplification of the uncertainty that is associated with healthcare in general. And as a doctor in training, where you're still trying to develop a sense of medical judgment and you're still learning skills, that can add a significant amount of stress to your training. But I guess the thing I would really like to highlight is that while there are certainly universal themes to the emotions that healthcare workers are experiencing during this time, I found that there really is no true universal experience. We're all human beings first. We all bring our own personal health history, our family histories and situations, and unique working situations into this experience. And I think that really affects the way that we respond to it as well.
Dr. Milligan, you and Taylor and Brittany are all pretty new in your medical careers. As I said earlier, you graduated just in 2018. You're still doing your medical residency. What's that like for you? You're supposed to be sort of the young doc on the floor, learning from the more experienced docs, and everything has been kind of upended in that sort of part of your formal training.
Absolutely. I think what's been really interesting is that we've become very used to a hierarchy where, as young docs still in training, we have a network or a safety net of attending doctors, nurses, medical personnel that are much more experienced than we are, that we can really turn to and may not have all the answers, but certainly have many of the answers that we're looking for. And what we've found is that, as Brittany mentioned, we are all very much tackling a new unknown, and that usual comfortable hierarchy has been upset a bit. And so our supervising docs and mentors may have a lot more experience in other healthcare situations, but no one's experienced coronavirus before, and we're all learning together. And that's on the one hand, very scary, and on the other hand, somewhat reassuring in that we are working on this problem and tackling it together the best that we all can.
I can imagine, though, Dr. Milligan, that it's a little unsettling. You know, you can't look at that senior doctor and say, what have you seen with this before, doctor? And please advise me, because he or she doesn't know.
Absolutely. And I think it's only added to the stress of residency. I mean, residency is not known for being an easy experience for anyone.
No, absolutely not.
We work
right.
Very long hours. We're often separated from our families. We may not have that much say in where we end up matching due to the National Match Program. We certainly have this big shift in responsibility and high stakes decision making that we're not used to having. And then you throw a bunch of debt on top of that. And it's not known for being a relaxing experience. But now you're right. Some of that sense of security is missing. Certainly, there's a lot more uncertainty in general, which is uncomfortable. And many of us are dealing with the added stress of having training exams canceled or rescheduled, having away rotation experiences that we were counting on as part of our medical training canceled or rescheduled, not necessarily going ahead with any certainty in what our schedule for training is going to be looking like. And add on to that, a new foray into telehealth, which again is something that I've noticed my supervising docs and I are kind of all wading into together. And there's certainly a lot of change afoot.
Taylor, I want to turn to you. After working for several years in New Hampshire as a nurse, you signed up just recently to be a traveling nurse. What was your reaction, Taylor, when your employer said, okay, thank you for signing up. Your first assignment is a COVID-19 unit in Brooklyn.
So my recruiter called me, and with travel nursing, you actually have the autonomy to kind of pick where you want to go. So I actually chose, when he called me, to actually go to Brooklyn. So he said, I have an assignment. It's 4 weeks long. It's in Brooklyn, New York. It's a crisis contract. They are very short staffed because of a lot of their nurses, doctors, medical staff actually got the virus due to lack of PPE at first. So he asked if I would like to go, and I was like, you know what? I think this would be a great opportunity for me. I just kind of felt called that I'm sitting here in New Hampshire and I have the skills that could help people. So that's kind of where the angle that I took it from.
So even though you knew that you would be replacing people who got this bad disease working in this particular environment, you said, sure, I'll go anyway.
Yeah, my first question was, do you have adequate PPE now?
Sure.
Because obviously I can't do my job if I can't help people if I'm sick. So, and they said, yes, the governor and the government had done everything that they could do to get as much supplies to the New York hospitals. And they did have enough supplies when I was there. So I said, sure. I think it would be a great opportunity, a good learning experience. And it was. Saw a lot of different things, worked with a lot of different people. So it was a great opportunity. And I just felt like it was needed for me to go, that I could make a difference. So
I'm sure you could talk about this for an hour, Taylor, but what was it like day to day for you on that COVID floor in Brooklyn?
Well, every day was different. Each day I never knew which floor I was going to be going to. So you would arrive and you knew you were working, but you had no idea where you were working. And you would wait in a room and they would call your name and they would say, okay, you're going to this floor. So you knew that you were working with a whole entire different staff each day, which was challenging, but it wasn't only Brooklyn staff. I was working with other travelers from all across the country that had come in, whether it be Seattle, Phoenix, Dallas, you name it, they were there. Like, so many different people from across the country were coming in. But each day was a different challenge. It was very overwhelming, very daunting. It's very different than New Hampshire. It was a very much like larger hospital than CMC or the Elliott. I've worked at both of them. Walking into the hospital is something that I remember. There were tents set up that were actually holding patients. The entire hospital was COVID. Everybody in the hospital was either a rule out COVID or had COVID. So that was very different. There were trucks that were holding as the morgue, because the morgue was overfilled. That was very daunting. So yeah, there was a lot of new things to see when I got there.
Wow. Well, Taylor, you were made of sterner stuff than me. That's an incredible experience. I want to remind our listeners that you can join us with your own stories, experiences, or questions for our healthcare workers. 1-800-892-6477 is our phone number. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Today in The Exchange, our in-depth series on COVID-19 and healthcare continues with healthcare workers. We're talking with three of them, all pretty early in their careers, and hearing their stories. We'd love to make your stories part of our conversation, too. Again, you can give us a call at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Brittany, I want to ask you about something Dr. Milligan said earlier, the idea that working with this crazy virus has sort of upended traditional hierarchies in medicine. And I wonder what you have seen in terms of the way people work together differently now.
I would say that there's been a stronger aspect of unity, particularly on my unit. And just like a quick insight for those who don't know, I work directly with registered nurses. So we work hand in hand, and above that are the physicians that work more closely with the nurses and all the other healthcare personnel. So the environmental services, respiratory therapists, occupational physical therapists, all of that. And I've noticed that there's been a higher aspect of unity where during normal times, people are more apt to help and collaborate, specifically regarding direct patient care, because that's what I spend the majority of my day doing. So if anything, on my unit specifically, it's brought us more together. I feel like we've been more intertwined and more ready to help and more understanding, where there's not one instance where I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm not really sure what to do with this patient, or this, you know, something is happening, when there's not a group of people running ready to help. So that's been a really great thing to experience, because we realize that we're all kind of in the same boats, so we might as well work together.
Taylor, what do you think?
Oh, I agree with Brittany. I felt when I was, especially in Brooklyn, as things are changing, you aren't spending as much time, unfortunately, in the patient's room. Everyone says you need to start clustering your care more. Only go in and get exposed when you have to. So I felt in Brooklyn, I leaned on my LNAs and was like, hey, I'm going in the room. What can we do and get it all done at once? We can tag team this. I felt same with the doctors. I spent a lot of time. It was more, I was working with residents. They had called in residents to work on the floors that I were working on. They were kind of calling the shots because the attendings were busy in the intensive care units. So I was, hey, I'm going into the room. Do you guys all want to come in with me? We can see this patient. We can get everything done that we need to do. So it was very much a team-based teamwork, all on the same page, working together. So I definitely agree with Brittany. I think it's brought everybody closer together because we're all working for the same cause here. We want to fight this. We want to find a way to make everybody's experience in the hospital as best as it can be, especially right now where they can't have their families there. So if we all join together as one, I think it's best for the patient. And ideally, that's why we're doing what we're doing.
Well, and Dr. Milligan, I wanted to ask you about that. You know, one of the hardest things, I mean, everything about this has been hard, but one of the hardest I have heard is that when people are very ill and even dying, their families cannot come in. How have medical professionals like yourself, Dr. Milligan, had to sort of adapt to that reality, that very sad reality?
Yeah, that's been a real struggle. My personal experience here in New Hampshire was certainly not as significant with patients that directly had COVID infections, but we did take care of patients with COVID infections. And more than that, we took care of a lot of really critically ill folks that really had tried to stay at home and weren't able to do so. So our patient list was very much filled with patients with new diagnoses of metastatic cancer, liver failure, severe alcohol withdrawal, kidney failure, bleeding disorders. And we really struggled to make sure that families were involved at the end of life. And sometimes that meant having patients, family members on speakerphone when we were going into the room to round on patients. Sometimes that was a morning call and an evening call with the family to give them updates and talk about different things. We were able to arrange for family members to come in for family meetings to discuss transition to comfort-based care. And we were able to have some limited visitation when patients were very, very close to dying. But it was a huge struggle. And I think it gave me a really strong sense of just how important it is to have family members involved in patient care. Because, you know, as a family doc in particular, when I take care of a patient, I'm not just taking care of them. You know, we see the patient as part of their family, part of their community, and we feel a responsibility to take care of that whole person.
Right. And it's very stressful. Oh my gosh, that's not even the right word for it when someone is extremely ill and dying and you want the family to be there. Taylor, how did you see the hospital you worked in Brooklyn managing that? And how did you manage that? If someone is, you know, if someone's dying, they want to hold the hand of their loved one.
Yeah. So the hospital that I was in was definitely very community oriented. And a lot of people, workers in the hospital, knew patients. So I actually had a nurse who worked on a different floor and I was taking care of a patient. And she was like, do you mind if I come up and I help him get ready for bed and do the care? Because I'm very good friends with his sister, and his sister, it would mean a lot if I came in and just spent some time with him. And sure, they were actually allowing that because it was a friendly face, comforting. So she actually came in and helped me do all the care and stuff like that. So I would have family call and I would take the phone in the room and do video chats, much like Dr. Milligan said, that they do with their rounds. So families would bring food and you would go down and grab it, pass notes. You were kind of like a messenger, the in-between man. But yeah, it was very different than what we're used to.
Right, where families just come in and sit by the bedside. Taylor, that's a whole nother, it sounds like you did it willingly, but that's a whole nother aspect of your job where you have to, you know, perform that courier role that you talked about. Also set up the video chat and get that going. And maybe the person on the other end isn't really sure how to do it. I mean, that's a whole another level of duties for you.
Yeah, I think for me, it was, if I had a family member in the hospital, how would I want them cared for? And how, like, knowing the worry of just not being there when you're with someone all the time and then they get separated, and going to the hospital in general is a very vulnerable time for a person. And to take that support person away from them. So I just felt like it's just another, like we talked about earlier, something new to our job. We have to be very flexible and realize that that's another added step that we're going to have to do right now in this time. So,
well, coming up, we'll talk about testing and protective equipment for healthcare workers, where that stands now. And I have a lot more questions for the three of you. We'll start hearing from our listeners, too. So send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, our in-depth series on COVID-19 and healthcare continues with healthcare workers. The crisis has inspired new appreciation for these professionals at all levels. We're talking with three healthcare workers early in their careers and hearing their experiences. And Exchange listeners, we really would like to make your stories and questions part of our conversation. So send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or call in 1-800-892-6477. With us for the hour are Brittany Booten, a licensed nursing assistant at Catholic Medical Center. Also, Dr. Meredith Milligan. She graduated from medical school in 2018. She's a second-year family medicine resident at Concord Hospital. And Taylor Trask. She recently became a traveling nurse. She's also worked as a nurse at CMC and the Elliott. And all of you going to listeners now, Arnie sends us an email. He says, some workers in healthcare, including nursing assistants, orderlies, custodial workers, home health aides, have low salaries with starting wages often under $15 an hour. Have their wages gone up appreciably in recognition of the risks they face and the essential nature of their work during a pandemic? Arnie, thank you very much for the question. And Brittany, I'll throw that to you since you're a licensed nursing assistant.
Yes, so thank you. And unfortunately, in my experience, wages have not increased. And I'm friends and acquaintances with a lot of other healthcare professionals, whether that be nursing assistants or nurses, and there's been similar sentiments. I know in New York, the wages have increased substantially because of the conditions, but here in New Hampshire, unfortunately, there's not been an increase. And even regarding nursing assistants, some of the beginning wages are under $15 an hour, and they tend to stay there. And a lot of the time, wages increase based on experience or where you are employed. But broadly speaking, it's usually under or around the $15 an hour range.
Well, Brittany, to you first, but I want to hear from everybody. What kind of help, besides higher wages or support, would you like from your employer? What would make you feel better about kind of putting yourself on the line every day?
I think two of the things that are really important to me is having increased staffing and increased education, because when you have more staffing, i.e. nursing assistants and just nurses in general, you're able to provide better patient care, whether that be better quality care or spending more time with the patients and ensuring that you're doing patient-related tasks properly, and especially during this time when census and hospitals are fluctuating so much and there is a high risk given this coronavirus that's happening. I think higher staffing is absolutely essential, and just greater education, not just on the coronavirus, because that's ever evolving because it's a new situation, but especially working on the unit that I do, there's a lot of different diseases and surgeries and other things that we face. So even just adding that little more education on the patients that we're dealing with also will assist us to provide better patient care, which is really what it's all about.
Well, and New Hampshire had a nursing shortage even before this all started happening. Dr. Milligan, how about you? How can hospitals make this extremely stressful time for their employees a little bit better?
I think number one is maintaining access to PPE and being open about what our PPE stores are looking like and what the plan is for the future to continue to protect our workers. Another piece that I have been very grateful for is that Concord Hospital has had really open lines of communication between leadership and staff. And I hope that that continues going forward. I think having open communication about our current state, our plans for the future, and staff concerns has been really essential to our response. And I also think that it's very important that we continue to create spaces for healthcare workers to process these incredibly challenging experiences that they're having. Whether you're dealing with COVID patients or not, there's a decent amount of grieving and really complex emotions, anywhere from feeling this really strong desire to serve and feeling encouraged by the way everyone has banded together, as well as, you know, significant loss and feelings of inadequacy that I'm not doing enough. And it's important that we make space for people to process what they're feeling and receive support as needed.
Yeah. I mean, does anybody really have time, Dr. Milligan, for that self-care that everybody says, you know, they need and says people should take? But, you know, it sounds good on paper, but do you and your colleagues have time to do that?
It is always a challenge. I think it was a challenge before COVID, and it's certainly more of a challenge now. What I will say is that sometimes self-care is as simple as taking a long shower and making sure you eat dinner, or wow, talking to your family on a phone, or doing a mindfulness meditation exercise for 5 minutes. And I think that there are ways to fit small things in every day that are helpful for us, with the reminder that we can't take care of other people if we're not well ourselves.
Put your own oxygen mask on first, as the airlines always tell us. Taylor, how about you? Again, you just got back from this intense Brooklyn COVID-19 experience, but you've also worked at CMC and Elliott, although in different times. What do you think hospitals as employers can do for, you know, workers like you and your fellow guests who are really just putting it all out there?
Yeah, to kind of like bounce off Dr. Milligan, I agree that an open line of communication is so important. Where we're at with the PPE, how much we have left, like just every day. Because I started, I was at CMC in the float pool when COVID first started, and
okay,
it was okay, we're gonna close down these units, and these are gonna be strictly COVID units, and these nurses are going to float here, and these people are going to go here. And if you've been working COVID, you can't go in this part of the hospital. So just very much an open line of communication is so important, because every day it seemed like you walked into the hospital and there was this is a new policy we're following. This is how we're going to don our PPE and doff our PPE today. Everything seemed to be changing. So that open line of communication, I think, is very important. And almost having listening to feedback from the people that are working directly with the patients, I think, is always important. Just listening to the nurses, the LNAs, the doctors, that this seems to be working on the floor and this seems to not be working, and be okay with making changes.
When the pandemic first hit, there were pretty horrifying stories about frontline healthcare workers not having enough masks and gowns, the PPE that you have all mentioned, to do their jobs safely. I want to hear from everybody on this, but Taylor, you first. So how do you see that situation now? Because a recent Washington Post survey showed, I just looked at this morning, indicates this is still a problem in parts of the country. So go ahead, Taylor, but I want to hear from everybody.
So my experience in New York, it was evident that we were getting PPE from everywhere. Every gown I put on was a different color, different brand. Every day it was a different N95 mask. And you almost had to you could tell tensions were high when you asked, I need another N95. Or people from different floors would come over and say, we're out of gowns. Do you guys have any? And we would find them, but it would just that, where did we put them? Where are they? Wow. So you had enough, but it was still very much a day-to-day topic of where are they being stored and how do we get them? We knew the hospital had them. It was just, when are we going to get them?
How about you, Brittany? Do you feel like you have enough PPE now to do your job safely? And I'm just wondering how much of a conversation this is at CMC, where you work.
I think that, in normal times, I think if we were comparing this to normal times, the answer is no. I've gotten used to how we're managing PPE right now. For example, so a couple of different kinds of masks. So you have the surgical masks and the N95, which helps, change the air and protects you that way. So during normal times, if we had a patient on precautions where we needed to wear the surgical mask, or you could have a couple of patients on your assignment, you would be changing that mask and changing those gowns or whatever else you're using every time you go in the room. And now when we walk onto the floor within CMC, every single person within the four walls or of the hospital has to wear a surgical mask. So not only do you go into the hospital wearing a surgical mask, but I tend to work 12-hour shifts. So I end up wearing that same surgical mask all day for 12 hours. And personally, I've had the opportunity among some of my other coworkers to be able to change that mask per shift, but ideally that's not how things should be happening. So that's one thing that I've noticed. And we've also been notified since March where the hospital was telling us, we're facing a shortage of the surgical masks and some of the disinfectant wipes that we tend to use to keep the unit clean. So that's been different as well, because we have a high regimen of keeping all of our equipment clean and other things, and not being able to have those resources definitely would potentially increase the risk of infection, which is not fun and is not something else that we should need to be worrying about, is the supply of our equipment. We should have it there and it should be ready.
Brittany, just to make sure I have it right, so you're supposed to have a new mask every time you walk into a new patient room? But instead, you're wearing the same mask all day? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, ideally, if there was a patient with the flu. With the flu, you want to wear that surgical mask. That's one of the PPE items that you would want to wear to protect yourselves. So say if I had a patient assignment of 6 patients and 5 of them had the flu, every time I would go in and out of each of those rooms, I would want to change my mask every time I'm going in and out. But right now, when we're on the floor, regardless of what patient we're working with, we got to wear the same masks.
And I've actually heard, Brittany, stories of nurses and doctors sometimes washing their N95 masks, which I think you're not supposed to do, right? You're supposed to just throw these things away and get a fresh one. Is that correct, Brittany?
Ideally, yes. I've been fit tested, which is a special test that makes sure the N95 fits on your face properly. And that happens many weeks ago, and I've had the same mask. We've been allotted one N95 mask and one face shield that needs to be cleaned, but I haven't really been educated on how to clean it. So I've been fit tested for the mask, but I don't know how to clean the mask. So that's something that causes anxiety. And you are correct. Like, you want to be able to change that mask after every encounter. But because of the shortage, we're not able to do that.
How is this affecting you, Dr. Milligan, in terms of masks and gowns? And it seems pretty basic, but apparently not.
Yeah, it's definitely been on my mind. Certainly the end of every phone call with my parents over these past couple weeks has been, or past couple months, has been, did you have enough PPE today? We have been very fortunate at Concord Hospital. We certainly are making concerted efforts to conserve PPE. We have the benefit of having reusable gowns that are being washed and cleaned appropriately between uses. So gowns, to my understanding, have not been an issue for us. We are doing similar or having similar techniques of conserving PPE as other local health institutions. So folks who are not taking direct care of patients but are still within the health organization are using cloth masks that have been generously donated by a number of community members. And we are restricting the frequency with which we are changing PPE as much as we can safely do so. I don't personally wear an N95. I was not able to get a good seal, and so I do have to wear a PAPR, which is more of a helmet situation. But those who are using N95s, to my knowledge, those are being cleaned by the hospital daily, and there is a certain restriction on the number of times you can use it before you have to have a new mask. My sense is that we are in decent shape for PPE, but certainly it is on everyone's minds, and we have absolutely relied on donations from the community and are so grateful for the support that the community has provided us.
Wow. Yeah. It reminds us of what Taylor said. You know, they had PPE at that hospital in Brooklyn, but sometimes it was, where is it? Where did we put it? Do we have enough on this floor or that floor? Coming up, I want to ask all of you about testing and then also how you feel about all the signs that we've seen in the community, those heartfelt handmade signs that say, you know, we support you, healthcare workers, getting a lot of public support from people. And we'll keep taking your questions and comments. You can email us like Arnie did, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Or you can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. This hour, our in-depth series on COVID-19 and healthcare continues with healthcare workers. This crisis has inspired new appreciation for these professionals. We're talking with three of them now, hearing what working in hospitals is like for them. And Exchange listeners, we'd love to hear from you. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can comment on Facebook, you can tweet us, or you can call in 1-800-892-6477. Our guests are Brittany Booten, a licensed nursing assistant at Catholic Medical Center in Manchester. Also, Dr. Meredith Milligan. She's a second-year family medicine resident at Concord Hospital. And Taylor Trask. She recently became a traveling nurse. She's also worked as a nurse at CMC and the Elliott in Manchester. Again, our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. I want to ask all of you also quickly about testing, following up on our conversation about PPE. Earlier in this crisis, the state reported that a quarter of all coronavirus cases were healthcare workers. Taylor, how often are you being tested for coronavirus?
This seems like a very hot subject right now.
Right.
Actually, we were never like encouraged to get tested. I know some hospitals, you have to have your temperature taken before you go into work. That was never the case for me in Brooklyn, at least. I did get tested when I returned home, but it was more like if you didn't feel well and you didn't have a temperature, you were coming to work. You needed to work because we were so short-staffed. But if you had a temperature, you were encouraged to stay home, quarantine, and carry out the protocol. But other than that, we were never like in push to get tested or anything like that. They did just start doing the antibody testing and encouraging people to get the antibody tests in order to donate plasma, because in Brooklyn, that was like, as I was leaving, plasma was what they were using as a new treatment plan. So they were encouraging us to.
Encouraging you to donate plasma. And it's interesting, though, and I've heard a lot about this, you know, we'll test you if you have a fever, or we'll tell you to stay home if you have symptoms. As you know better than me, Taylor, people can be completely asymptomatic and still be carrying virus. So what do you think the testing protocol, Taylor, should be for medical professionals working directly with patients?
That's a really good question. I mean, if a young person like myself could be completely asymptomatic, I think it is important that we do get tested, because we could be spreading it to those patients that may be a rule out and actually be negative, and I could be a carrier and give it to them. So I think the more we know about it, it's changing every day. But I do think that if you have the opportunity to get tested, it's important to get tested and then take the steps to quarantine and hopefully stop the spread.
And Brittany, how often are you tested, and how often are your patients tested? And let's just clarify too, Brittany, you're working not all day in a COVID unit at CMC, right? You're doing, you're working in the cardiology unit, so people who need stents and heart surgery and so forth. So tell us about the testing routines in your day, either for yourself or your patients.
So regarding staff, testing, last that I knew of, this was the policy. So they were only testing, the hospital would only be testing if you were developing symptoms. And I was tested a few weeks ago because I was dealing with some more of like the muscle aches and pains and that kind of area. And luckily I was tested negative, so there was no concern there. But we were only testing if you were symptomatic. Even if you were like exposed to someone who was positive, you could still come to work, but you were only tested if you were symptomatic. And then if you were tested positive, you would be quarantined. So that was the policy last that I knew of. And then regarding patients, so even though I'm not working directly on a COVID-19 unit, there tends to be more of some more instances where I'm getting potentially exposed, where I just had a patient the other day where they were moved from another unit because their roommate tested positive with COVID-19. Or a lot of patients, when we discharge patients, they'll either get discharged back to the nursing home where they live, or they can get discharged to a physical rehab facility if they still need further work. And the policy right now is before they're even eligible to go to those facilities, they have to be tested. And in some of those instances, they would be tested and not showing symptoms, and then they would be positive. So there's a lot of things up in the air where we definitely seem to be doing a lot more testing with patients, like if patients develop symptoms or patients had exposures, but not so much with staff.
Not so much with staff. So just to clarify, Brittany, if somebody comes in for heart surgery and then they're recovering and then they get sent to rehab, they need to be tested before they leave so that they know they're not infecting other people to the new place they're going. Yeah. So they get tested, but if they end up being positive, you're the nurse who has worked with that person, maybe not with all the high level protective gear, and there they are testing positive, and you could, you know, be open to wider exposure, Brittany. Tell me if I have that right.
Exactly. So that's a lot of what's going on too. And even just, I felt so as lately, even just being in the hospital environment yourself, like I have coworkers that have been floated to those COVID units, but then they come back and, you know, you don't know exactly what happened on the unit. So it really feels like the hospital is like a whole hotspot for COVID because there's so much variability and we don't know everything about this virus yet. So that's where a lot of the concern comes from, because I've been dealing a lot with like a lot of instances like that where they get tested because they're awaiting discharge, or they happen to be exposed to someone, or they're asymptomatic. So that's definitely the scary part.
So should patients, Brittany, in your opinion, be tested even before they are admitted?
Should patients be tested before they're admitted?
Yeah, for any type of procedure.
I think it's definitely important if they have risk factors. So if they have higher risk factors, so if they are in that older age group, or if they have, you know, other respiratory or other diseases that have similar symptoms, I think that's definitely very important, like determining if they're at risk and if they're not at risk. And definitely if they're presenting symptoms. So if they have that fever, that cough, that shortness of breath, I think that's totally a no-brainer. But that's really, after that, it really comes to that thin line where it's like, there's not an endless amount of tests. So it's really deciding, how are we, you know, how are the tests going to be utilized? Because even just within the hospital, I spend a lot of my day now picking up COVID tests from the lab and bringing COVID tests to the lab. And it's there's a procedure just to even do that. So they're definitely being highly regulated. And it's really a question of, you know, it's really uncertain with that asymptomatic line that could potentially be going on.
Well, and Dr. Milligan, as hospitals open up to more sort of what are called elective procedures, which makes it sound, you know, sort of light and easy, but we're talking about people who are in severe pain, who need, you know, heart surgeries or knee surgeries or something. As hospitals open up to these procedures, what do you think the testing protocol should look like?
I think that has been the big question on everyone's minds as we are moving to reopen the state. And right now, it is my understanding that we will be testing folks prior to coming into the hospital for an elective procedure. But I definitely echo what has been said, that there is not an unlimited supply of tests. And as we are navigating what to do in this pandemic, we do have to be mindful of limited resources and using them in a way that is going to change our management. Whenever we order tests as residents, the attending doc always says, yeah, but is that going to change what you're going to do? And so I think we just have to be mindful of how we're utilizing what still is a somewhat limited resource.
I see what you're saying. So yes, it would be nice if we could test every single patient who comes in the door for whatever procedure, but test kits are still limited, Dr. Milligan?
At least when I was in the hospital, reagent was a problem, and we had shortages of reagents and backups in labs. They've certainly gotten a lot better than in March, but you know, it's not an endless supply.
What kind of misinformation or confusion do the three of you find yourself bumping up against from patients or their families? And Taylor, I want to start with you.
Okay.
What is it that people don't get about this? Yeah, I just wonder, I know that some health professionals have concerns about misinformation, misunderstandings, you know, people just not getting it. And, you know, it's not their fault. There's a lot to understand about this. But what do you hear from people just not understanding about this again and again? I'm talking about the general public, not people in your field.
Yeah. Well, I think it's hard, obviously, with the news every day, something's changing. And obviously, there's this big question about reopening the state. I think what I try to tell my family and my friends that aren't in the medical field that are sending questions my way, that it's important that this is kind of, we have a general understanding that there's no quick fix to COVID right now, and that it needs to be kind of like a nationwide understanding that we all need to agree to kind of do our part. We know that we can wear masks. We know we can wash our hands. We know we can stay 6 feet apart from strangers or people that we're not in our daily lives. So I think it's just important to control what we can control. And I feel like that's what I've been doing when I don't have a understanding, or I feel like I'm getting so much information from so many different places.
And I'm sure people are turning to you and saying, what about this quick fix? And what about this quick fix? Dr. Milligan, how about you? How do you feel about the state reopening, first of all?
Yeah, I think the general public has really had an emotional roller coaster over the last few months. There has absolutely been a lot of uncertainty. There's been a lot of changing information out there. And I think as we start to reopen, I agree that it's very important that we are mindful that this is not an end to COVID. COVID is not going away anytime soon. And we do need to continue to do the things we can. Washing hands never goes out of style, pandemic or not. And I think we should continue to be collecting data and looking at the data and responding as the data is instructing us to do so. It's very important that we see and are aware of the changes that are going on in this pandemic and are responding based on what makes sense from a scientific and healthcare perspective, rather than responding based on frustration at isolation.
So it sounds like, Dr. Milligan, you're a little concerned about states opening too quickly.
Yeah, I do think that it needs to be a gradual process. And I'm hopeful that, you know, as we start to reopen, we also use this pandemic as an opportunity to keep the things that we liked about our pandemic responses. I absolutely think that telehealth is not going away, nor should it, but we have to be mindful about how we use it. I think there have been a lot of different changes in resident education and virtual learning that have been positive. There have been a lot of different roles that folks have taken on that have been very helpful. And I think this is a unique opportunity as we sort of restart things that we can almost have a bit of a fresh start and continue to work on creating the healthcare system that we want, that will help the most people.
You know, I wanted to ask you that too, Brittany, just following up on what Dr. Milligan says. Once this pandemic is over, what do you think is going to remain with you, Brittany, in terms of new ways of approaching your job or new ways of thinking about your work?
I think I will forever have an increased sense of awareness and appreciation for what I do. Because sometimes, like, I've been practicing in the field for over 3.5 years. And sometimes you can, you know, become a victim of compassion fatigue and get used to the routine and not step back and see the whole picture. So I think I'm really going to have a greater appreciation for the impact I'm able to have on patients, on the fact that I'm able to hold the hands of patients, you know, when they're scared, and just me with all of my coworkers, how important washing hands and preventing infection is to not only, you know, prevent the spread of disease, but just overall the well-being of the patient. So just that, and being aware of, okay, so this happens, what can I do as an individual, and what can we do as healthcare workers to help prevent this in the future? So taking those, going off of what has been said, taking those notes of washing hands and staying 6 feet apart and being mindful of the collective.
So that's your hope for the future as we move forward, Brittany, that people will sort of keep that broader, that's why we call it public health, right? Because it's about the public, keeping that public perspective in mind. I could talk to all three of you for a lot longer, but we do have to wrap it up there. And Dr. Milligan, I want to thank you very much for being with us, and good luck as this continues. Go ahead. Thank you so much. Yeah, that's Meredith Milligan. She graduated from medical school 2 years ago. She's a second-year family resident at Concord Hospital. Brittany, really good to have you too. Thank you so much for your time, and good luck to you too.
Of course. Thank you so much.
That's Brittany Booten, licensed nursing assistant at Catholic Medical Center in Manchester. And Taylor Trask, thank you also, and good luck as you continue traveling to other healthcare facilities around the country. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
That's Taylor Trask. She's a traveling nurse with Medical Solutions. She's also worked as a nurse at CMC and the Elliott in Manchester. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoi.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org or subscribe to our podcast. Search Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Stitcher for NHPR Exchange.